That takes us to just about 7:34 in the morning. The program's up front. My name's Brian Edwards-Tiekert. Funny thing happened in policing in Oakland in early 2016. Sean Wendt, the then police chief, someone who had been leading reform, court-supervised reform efforts within the department, abruptly stepped down. Then a few days later, his replacement abruptly stepped down. And a few days after that, the third replacement abruptly stood down. It was three police chiefs out in the space of 9 days, and a visibly distraught Mayor Libby Schaff, who announced she wanted to be running a police department, not a frat house. We didn't have a clear window into what was happening in that police department until the work of one of our next guests, investigative journalist Darwin Bond Graham, exposed a sweeping scandal implicating officers from multiple police agencies, 17 of them inside the Oakland Police Department, involving the trafficking of a minor, a person who, for the purposes of the reporting, was named Celeste Guap. That's not her real name. But it wasn't until now, thanks to the passage of Senate Bill 1421, something Kat Brooks worked on a lot in her spare time, that we got a window into what the internal response inside the Oakland Police Department has looked like. A little less than a week ago, OPD released a heavily redacted report from its internal affairs investigation into the Celeste Guap scandal. Darwin Bond Graham joins us now in studio. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning.
So let's recap here. There was a young woman, the daughter of a police dispatcher.
Right.
Who somehow developed mostly sexual relationships with more than 24 police officers across multiple agencies.
Yeah. She ended up telling OPD internal affairs officers when she was interviewed that she had either been exploited by while she was a minor, or later when she was over the age of 18, communicated with and had sex with over 28 police officers in the Bay Area, at least 17 of which were Oakland police officers. Her background appears that when she was a child, she underwent some traumatic experiences, and this eventually led to her forming this opinion of police officers as people she admired. So she was then easily exploited by police officers later in life.
When did the top brass at the Oakland Police Department start to find out about this?
Yeah, this is where it gets really convoluted. There was a rookie police officer, Brendan O'Brien, who was involved in the trafficking of this young woman when she was still a teenager, when she was still a girl. O'Brien appears to have defined his relationship with her as one that was consensual, although he knew she was a minor. He killed himself in September 2015, and he left a suicide note. And the new internal affairs document that the Oakland Police Department made public gives us the first glimpse at some of the contents of that suicide note. No one's been able to see it up to this point, but there's an excerpt from it in the internal affairs report. And O'Brien wrote that it appears that, and then he's referring to this young woman, Celeste Guap, she was involved with many OPD officers while she was still a minor. And then in his suicide note, O'Brien left the password to his iPhone for police investigators. And so OPD investigators were able to unlock his phone and view the contents of these text message conversations between O'Brien and Celeste Guap. And they showed these discussions, and that led to the opening of this internal affairs case into these officers who committed trafficking and many other criminal and policy violations.
When you say trafficking, what does it mean specifically?
Trafficking means any sexual conduct between an adult and a minor in California is now partly defined as human sexual trafficking. And when any two adults knowingly conspire to sexually exploit a child, that's trafficking. And so in this case, multiple Oakland police officers knew that one another were sexually exploiting this teenage girl And then later, after she had turned 18, they knew that many police officers in the Bay Area were sexually exploiting her still.
So how much of the internal affairs investigation files are redacted in the release?
Yeah, this in a way, the release last week illustrates the extreme limits of SB 1421. We don't learn a lot new in these files. Three or four fifths of the over half of this report easily is fully redacted. There are complete pages that are fully redacted. It's obvious from the report that there are 17 officers who were subject to investigation. Most of their names are redacted. The only officers identified in the report are former officers Terrell Smith and James Tai, who resigned while they were being investigated. Warrett Utapa, who still works at the Ogun Police Department, and Luis Roman, who still works at the Ogun Police Department. And then there were a couple other police officers who were named in the report, but they were named as witnesses.
So on what grounds are police agencies under law allowed to redact internal investigation files when they're subject to 1421 release?
They're allowed. So in this case, the reason this file was required to be made public under 1421 is that it pertains to sexual misconduct of police officers. And that's one of the four categories of records that are no longer exempt. And but under 1421, and under the new law, the record is only to be made public if a sustained finding has been made against the police officer. So that means the police officer has to have been found under the preponderance of evidence standard to have committed the misconduct. And so in this case, the Oakland Police Department is essentially saying that it only found that four officers under the preponderance of evidence committed sexual misconduct in this case, or committed some other misconduct in relation to the investigation of the 17 total. And that's why vast portions of the record are redacted. And it's also worth noting that even Brendan O'Brien's name does not appear anywhere in the report, despite the fact that it's pretty obvious that he had a sexual relationship with a minor. His suicide note confessed it, more or less. His iPhone contained vast amounts of evidence of it. Then he committed suicide, and he was suspected of murdering his wife the previous year, and yet the Oakland Police Department redacted his name from the report entirely in the name of maintaining confidentiality under the law.
And they wouldn't have had a sustained finding against him because what's the point? He's dead?
I guess so, even though they conducted a criminal investigation into him when he was, briefly thought of possibly murdered his wife. And even though his own phone and suicide note contained admissions and evidence that he committed crimes in addition to policy violations, they redacted his name. This really shows the limits of 1421, and it shows the discretion to which agencies can choose to omit information. The law. This is a profound new law because we get to look at these internal affairs files, but we don't get to see the full record.
Now, this is an investigation that was conducted before 1421 went on the books and made records retroactively available. But it strikes me this points to a perverse incentive that exists under 1421 now, which is if you're a police department that does not want to dish your dirty laundry, one way to avoid being forced to release it is don't make adverse findings against any of your police officers.
Yeah, I mean, logically, that could be a perverse incentive that we're seeing. At the same time, some of the police captains and sheriff's officials that I've spoken to since the law went into effect, they maintain that they do not want dirty cops, they do not want dishonest cops on their police forces, and that it's bad for morale and that it's bad for the administration of justice. So they maintain that that's not influencing them at all. But we are seeing incredible resistance within law enforcement against 1421. We're seeing a lot of police and sheriff's offices refusing to hand over records, delaying the handover of records. And as of Monday, we're seeing the state attorney general appealing a court decision that requires his office to hand over police misconduct records. The attorney general has finally admitted that, you know, the law applies to older records that go back before January 1st of this year. But the attorney general wants to say that records in the possession of that office that pertain to police forces and sheriff's offices are not something he has to hand over because he's not the employing agency. So up and down the board, from the attorney general all the way down to local police departments, we're seeing incredible resistance to handing over these records. And just the last thing, one of the reasons we're getting the internal affairs files related to this 2016 sex trafficking scandal with the Oakland Police Department is because it was relatively recent. State law allows police agencies to destroy records that go back more than 5 years related to officer misconduct. And we're seeing police departments purging huge amounts of records around the state.
Speaking of Darwin Von Graham, he's an independent journalist covering violence and misconduct by police departments. At the time that he wrote the Polk Award-winning story that broke open the scandal inside the Oakland Police Department, he was a staff writer at the East Bay Express. I want to talk a little bit about where the police who get named in this document release are now. Terrell Smith, James Tye, as you said, they both had adverse findings sustained against them in the internal investigation, but they both resigned before they were fired. An employment history check, these are people who quit their jobs, were not criminally prosecuted, but for 1421, they would be entirely hireable as cops by other police departments, right?
Yeah, except that, you know, their names are out there and it's not, you know, you don't even have to conduct a background check on these guys. You just have to Google them now to figure this stuff out. But yeah, so Terrell Smith refused to sit down with internal affairs investigators and provide a on the record statement. And so, in so doing, he had to resign because the police department could have terminated him for simply refusing to sit down and give an interview. James Tye did give an interview, but then he resigned. What happened was he actually lied to internal affairs investigators, and that's something that we're actually learning with the disclosure of this report because we didn't know anything about his interview with internal affairs. But he essentially lied about, he said that he had only had this online relationship with Celeste Guap, but in fact he had met up with her physically and they had had sex. This was after she had turned 18. He knew that she was a prostitute. That's using the language of the report. And then he resigned after he was confronted with those lies by internal affairs. There are other the other officers named in the report who still work at OPD, and that's because the sustained findings against them were of a relatively low level in the disciplinary matrix of the police department. So Warrett Utapa and Luis Roman, what they were disciplined for was a matter of general conduct. Their behavior was seen as bringing disrepute on the police department because they were irresponsible and because their actions resulted in bad media coverage. That's essentially why they were disciplined, but that's essentially why they were allowed to maintain their jobs.
So what, they just got written up and moved on?
Yeah, they still work there. And there are other officers who were identified during the scandal. For example, there was an officer, Giovanni Laverde. He was identified by this young woman as someone that who had a sexual relationship with her, who through various evidence and other interviews was seen as someone who should have known that she was a sex worker. He should have known, and he probably did know, that she had been exploited by other officers. And he is not named in this report. We don't see a sustained finding against him, and he still works at the Oakland Police Department. And keep in mind, there were 17 officers in this report. And a lot of them still work at the Oakland Police Department, and we don't know their, some of them we don't know their names. They're just, their names are blacked out.
So, obvious question every time a police scandal like this breaks out is, how seriously is the internal investigation prosecuted? This is one of the very rare occasions where we can lay our hands on the documents that result from that investigation, as heavily redacted as they are. Like, what's your assessment? Did OPD take this seriously?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, because this internal affairs report that was released, this is actually the second IA report. And this is not something the city is admitting to at this point. And the mayor, Libby Schaff, released a press statement last week when this document was made public saying, you know, we're committed to transparency. The truth is that there was a underlying previous internal affairs investigation. It has the same number, 15-0771. And it was started after, similarly, when Officer Brendan O'Brien committed suicide and left a note and left the password to his phone. That investigation went nowhere. It was purposefully hushed by the highest levels within the police department, and it was closed out. It was essentially a closed case until the Oakland Police Department's federal court-appointed monitor, found out about the scandal and told U.S. District Judge Thelton Henderson in early 2016 about what happened. And then the judge issued a March 23rd order reopening the case and handing it over to Warshaw, the federal court-appointed monitor. And he had it reopened, and he appointed a new investigative team and told them to report to him, not to Chief Wendt. And that's the document that we're seeing here. It's a very polished, oh, look, we investigated 17 officers and we found all this wrongdoing. We're not seeing the previous documents, which are documents of a brazen attempt to make this teenager, this young woman go away, make her complaints go away, and close out the case. We don't have any of those documents yet. And there are numerous other documents that we don't have. This entire case, the significance of it is that the police department, they mishandled it to such a degree that it took a federal judge to reopen it and really get to the bottom of what happened.
So I don't get it. Why weren't the records produced by the first failed version of that internal affairs investigation? Why weren't they produced in response to your SB 1421 request?
The police department and the city of Oakland said that they're going to produce some other records related to this overall investigation over time on a rolling basis. Right now, they've only given us this final report, which really, this report picks up after the judge's order. It picks up after March 23rd, 2016. And they also released a PowerPoint presentation that accompanies this final report. And that's it. And there are numerous other documents. In fact, under SB 1421, the videotaped statements of Officer James Tai, that should be a matter of public record. The homicide investigation that the police department conducted the criminal investigation into the deaths of Officer Brendan O'Brien and his wife, the criminal investigations of Terrell Smith for allegedly committing attempted rape against this young woman. That should be disclosed. It hasn't been disclosed yet. There's numerous other records that are part of this case that just the city hasn't disclosed yet. Yeah, they can redact some of the confidential information in them. But given that it's a matter of great public interest, this is something that we should have seen already, I think.
Darwin Bongram, Terrell Smith, the police officer in Oakland Police Department who resigned rather than answer questions during the internal affairs investigation, the one who had a sustained finding of committing attempted rape against him. Attempted rape is not just a fireable offense, it is a prosecutable crime. Is there a record of it actually being referred out to the DA's office?
Yeah, they did. The Oakland Police Department says that they recommended the Contra Costa district attorney look at the evidence and consider filing charges. The Contra Costa district attorney declined.
And this is because the attempted rape was in Contra Costa, or because?
Yeah, it was near Richmond.
Okay.
It was in a park near Richmond, I believe. And the district attorney declined to file charges. And it's unclear why, but generally district attorneys, you know, want to have a provable case. They don't want to file charges on something they don't feel like they can prove. And
but generally also district attorneys can't do anything if they don't retain a good working relationship with police.
That's true. Yeah. And also in this sprawling scandal, there were numerous police officers who allegedly committed crimes. Here in Alameda County, District Attorney Nancy O'Malley charged a number of police officers with different crimes, including things like, you know, illegally accessing a police database, illegally furnishing information. This was like Terrell Smith and another officer, Brian Bunton, basically looked up police records and police databases and Bunton gave information to Celeste Guap, as did Terrell Smith, about like undercover Oakland police operations along the track on East 14th in Oakland. And they were charged. A lot of those cases ended up falling apart, and charges were dismissed against a number of officers, partly due to the fact that the young woman at the center of all this didn't want to be a witness in these cases. She wanted to move on with her life. She didn't want to testify against police officers. And partly also because the district attorney's office just chose to allow them to be dismissed. So a lot of the officers got off with very lenient plea deals or had charges dismissed all the way.
But the charges were at least brought in Alameda County.
Yeah.
In Contra Costa. This is not the district attorney who holds the office today.
No. Yeah, that was under Mark Peterson, who resigned in the wake of his own scandal around embezzling a large amount of campaign funds. And so he is gone now. This was a instance where the Oakland police felt that there was at least a preponderance of evidence that Terrell Smith committed attempted rape, but the Contra Costa district attorney did not believe they could charge that case successfully.
Wow. Darwin Bond Graham, thanks for the work. Thanks for coming in to talk about it.
Yeah, thank you.
Darwin Bond Graham is now an independent journalist covering violence and misconduct by police departments. Won the Polk Award in 2016 for the expose that he co-authored with Ollie Winston into the sprawling sex trafficking scandal that enveloped dozens of police officers and agents around the Bay Area. That takes us to just past 7:57 in the morning. The program's up front. I'm Brian Edwards-Tieker with Janine Etter. I'm going to take a quick look at what's happening on the stage before we move on with the program. Here's Richard Walensky. You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert. Well, we're going to turn now from the situation of migrants at the southern U.S. border, which we've been covering a lot. Well, that's not Richard Walensky. It is 7:58 in the morning here at KPFA, 94.1 FM in Berkeley, KPFB, 89.3 FM in Berkeley, KFCF, 88.1 FM in Fresno, K248BR, 97.5 FM in Santa Cruz, and online around the world at www.kpfa.org. Coming up in the second hour of our program, we're going to be speaking to investigative journalist A.C. Thompson from ProPublica about his story that broke this week, looking inside the closed private Facebook group that is for Customs and Border Patrol agents, purports to have 9,500 of them signed up, posting some extraordinarily ugly stuff that has prompted the public announcement of an investigation by that agency. We're going to have a conversation about the culture within the law enforcement personnel who are dealing with extraordinarily vulnerable migrants at the border. And also with the responsibility of platforms like Facebook that are creating space for this kind of speech, this kind of networking, and this kind of collective action online. A couple of announcements before we move on with the program. I'm going to be hosting our next KPFA event, which I am pretty excited about. This is Randall Monroe, the creative genius behind the online comic XKCD. He's just coming out with a new book called How To: Absurd Scientific Advice for Common Real World Problems. And this is a big event for us. The tickets are selling much faster than we expected. It's going to be September 10th, 7:30 p.m. at the First Congregational Church of Berkeley. And normally I wouldn't be plugging it this early. It's just Randall has such a big following on his own. We're worried that not enough KPFA people will be able to get tickets to get in. So tickets are in all the usual places, brownpapertickets.com or over the counter at local independent booksellers. If you want to see Randall Monroe, the creator behind XKCD, at a KPFA event on September 10th at 7:30. We have a huge fall lineup coming up after that. Amitav Ghosh, Jonathan Safran Foer, Michael Lerner, and much more. You can get full details on our website, www.kpfa.org. We'll be back with A.C. Thompson after the news.